Hey listeners, this is Travis Book, bassist and singer in the bluegrass band The Infamous String Dusters. I started the Travis Book Happy Hour to try to get to the root of what makes my contemporaries tick, what inspires and motivates them, and why they make music. It's an hour where we get to play together, talk about life, and do it all in front of a live studio audience. If you haven't listened yet, maybe check out some of my highlights, including Sierra Hull, Beppe Gambetta, Tim O'Brien, and Lindsay Liu. You can find every episode of the Travis Book Happy Hour on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians. It's Cindy Howes. I am the host of this podcast. It's so wonderful to have you here today. We have Maya DeVitri on the pod today, going track by track through her new album, Violet Lights. Before we get into that, a couple of reminders about how you can support this listener-supported podcast. So there's a few ways that you can support us. You can make a financial contribution at basicfolk.com under the donate button. If you donate at least $5 a month or $60 for the year, you'll gain access to Backstage, which is our monthly, very fun and cool bonus content. This month for Backstage, we actually have something really amazing posted if you are a Maya DeVitri fan. Maya, Lizzie No, who is the guest host of Basic Folk, and I all got together for a fun friend chat and played DJ for each other, sharing our favorite dog songs in honor of Maya's new song, Dogs Run On, and also our favorite songs in Spanish, because Maya is earning her degree in Spanish, and I like to pretend I'm fluent. That's up at Backstage now. We'll actually post a preview in the feed in a couple of days that you can check out and join us backstage with a generous contribution of $5 a month. And also, if you give $5 a month right now, you can get a handmade Basic Folk beanie, handmade hats made by my mom, Pat House, and they have a little hipster Basic Folk label sewn onto them, and they're very sweet. So $5 a month gets you access to Backstage. You can get a Basic Folk beanie, and you're supporting this very fun and cute folk podcast. And you can do all of that at basicfolk.com. That's also where you can sign up for our monthly newsletter. And we also send out a couple updates here and there, but you know, nothing too overwhelming. Sign up for our newsletter. You can also follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Basic Folk Pod. Stay in touch with us. You can also leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can tell a friend. You could forward this episode to a friend, which is something I love to do when I'm listening to a podcast like halfway through. I'm like sending it to like seven people. I'm like, you would like this podcast. You could do that, or you can keep on, you know, listening and loving the podcast and loving life. That is also great. Okay, Maya DeVitri released her third solo record, Violet Light, earlier this year. And I, for one, am happy that my fiance has a new Maya record to play endlessly in our house. LOL, JK. I love Maya, and this album is perfect. Maya's originally from Lancaster, PA, where she lived and met the performers of her old band, The Straybirds. Since the dissolution of The Birds, she's been incredibly prolific with all these solo albums, co-writes, and the like. If you're not familiar, this record is a great intro into the genius of one of the greatest musicians on the scene today. The vibes I'm getting from this record are like John Prine, Patty Griffin, and of course, Gillian Welch, Dave Rawlings, and we are digging in. I'm so happy Maya was up for going through this beauty of a record track by track. It's a brilliant collection of songs that subtly knocks you to the ground over the course of its 11 tracks. Produced at home with her partner, the much-in-demand bassist and producer Ethan Yojevitz, who's worked with the Milk Carton Kids, Sierra Hull, Aoife O'Donovan, Daryl Anger, Tony Trischka, and many more, Violet Light actually contains a ton of collaborations from Maya's extensive musical community. This includes her own family. Her siblings all collaborated for the very first time on tape for the song Real Time, Real Tears, about losing a favorite uncle. Yeah, you try not crying during that one. Anywho, it feels like a gift to be able to turn these songs over and over, contemplate their meaning, their creation, and then be able to talk directly to the brains behind it all. I implore you to go check out this whole episode and then go buy Maya's new album, preferably on Bandcamp. Support an independent artist whose music is meaningful and worth getting paid for. She's a once-in-a-lifetime artist. So excited to dig into this. Let's go track by track on Violet Light with Maya DeVitri on Basic Folk. All right, cool. Maya, it's so awesome to see you. Thanks for being on Basic Folk.
Thanks for having me, Cindy. I'm so happy to see you too.
So before we launch into this record, I read that you are working or maybe have completed a Spanish language degree.
Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm not taking any classes this spring semester because I'm really sick of Zoom, except for talking to you today.
obviously, but, the one exception.
Yeah, but I'm working on it, and I have two classes to go. One more Spanish literature class and a science class.
Muy bien.
Gracias.
What made you want to go after that? And what has it done for your brain? What has it done for your overall energy? And has it impacted music for you at all?
I mean, I've always been really, really interested in language and just the idea that there's other ways people describe the world other than the English words that I grew up with. And I grew up with a lot of French relatives and people who spoke other languages at family reunions and stuff. And then when I was getting to travel with music and first busking around, but then touring too, I would, go to Spanish-speaking countries or French-speaking countries and just be immersed and spend time with families. And so I've really wanted to finish a college degree because I started studying liberal arts and music when I was 19, 20 years old, and then just never finished it. And yeah, I think most of my study of language was just really informal, the way that a kid would learn, hanging out with people around a kitchen table. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to get in deeper and take Spanish grammar classes and literature classes. And it's also been a way for me to think about the bigness of the world during COVID. And mm-hmm. I'm not going to go live abroad right now or spend time traveling, crossing borders and doing customs and stuff. But I was meeting one-on-one for almost a whole year with a Spanish teacher who lives in Guatemala. And so just we became friends, speaking to each other a couple times a week. And just, really, I was just really committed to trying to understand what life was there. And it was this constant perspective that was different than any kind of news I was getting here or, and it just for my, as far as what it did to my brain, it's just always another option of an alternate world or something. It's already cool for me to think that everybody's experience of the world is our own thing in our own head. But then there's just truly entire other languages and cultures and words and concepts that people have for the experience of being a human. And that's very interesting to me.
What about in your writing, in terms of learning the pronunciation and the rhythm of the way somebody from Guatemala might speak, do you see that coming out in your writing or even in your own speaking?
I do see it come out in my ear, the sharpness of my ear to be attuned to things like that, or to be attuned to the way people use language. Or actually, it really helps me to tune into the most precise way to say something sometimes, because there's to be very, very aware of what is figurative language in English, or what are these expressions and things that are just so second nature to us that that would be very like difficult to translate. It just makes me more aware of language in general and like how to be to like what's the clearest way to say what you want to say to someone.
Yeah.
And it helps me write emails more clearly because I
Oh, that's cool.
You know, just even something like that in English, like it'll help me just with the way that I think about writing a single sentence because I'm aware of like how the language is functioning more.
Wow. I could talk to you like all day about this particular topic, but we are here to talk about your new album, Violet Light. The way this album was recorded is very collaborative. You know what? I've never actually said Ethan's last name out loud. How do you say it?
It's Yojevitz.
So you and Ethan Yojevitz produced the album at home. Ethan created a home studio during the pandemic because he's like a pretty prolific upright bass player and has had to make recordings at home. Each track features its own band. How did that aspect and how did the vibe of like the way the album was created impact your spirits during the pandemic and excitement for producing these songs?
It was a really elevating experience to have to visit each of these songs and get into the headspace of the song like many times over, because we would first have to get in, you know, first we would get my part. Just most of these songs started with just me playing and singing guitar and kind of having to like imagine the rest of the parts all there, and so that felt like the most pandemic-ness of it was like, you know, just being alone, the two of us in this basement room, like, okay, here we go, we're starting an album. and then trusting that I could sing, that I could embody the songs, like, and give what the songs needed, trusting that I could do that, like, in that sort of empty space feeling of, like, this abyss. Like, I hope that the other stuff sounds good when it all comes together. And then trusting that everybody in the process could kind of rise to that occasion of recording remotely, too. And because a lot of people were able to come over and actually come into the basement and record here, and Ethan and I could produce them, you know, face to face in a way. And some of the people were far away, and we got together on FaceTime or Zoom and worked with them that way. It all allowed for these really individual like moments, you know, like, you know, we got to like hang out with Kaya Cater like one-on-one for, dang, you know, for a couple times throughout the pandemic, just working on honing in her harmony part on Leftover Tears. And we worked with Thor Davidson, this amazing harmonica player who plays on the song Margaret, and he was recording, you know, in Iceland. And so, you know, getting to check in with him, it was like, and every time we would work with somebody who was tracking remotely, it would start out with like, so how are you? Like, what's going on? Like, what else, you know, what are you doing with your days? And how are you feeling? And just such a different process than a typical session, you know, where the band is all there and you track a couple songs in a day. And you never really get one-on-one time with people like that in a studio, because it's kind of all getting in this collective headspace. Honestly, for me to be, for Ethan and I to be co-producing this, it was kind of a gift to us to be able to do it this way, because, you know, we could have a drummer over to be tracking drums on one song, and we were just focused on that one song and just producing those sounds for that day. And that was what like that afternoon was dedicated to. And it really, really elevated my ear, my sense of listening, and my ability to hear details in music, and my ability to refine how to talk to people about music and how to communicate with like all these different personalities, but like the record, it just felt like making a record, but in like slow motion. Some of these songs, I mean, all the parts to the song were recorded over the course of a year or something. So
yeah,
but the whole experience really was a gift and like truly elevating, and to be able to have a long-term project just really kept us going. It was really, it was a really good thing to put our energy into.
Gosh, I love your brain. It's a good brain. All right, let's go through the album track by track. Violet Light, let's start off with the opening number, which is called Flowers. This world was never track by track out. So if anybody is wondering where I'm pulling these quotes and facts from, it's from Maya herself. So you wrote that this is a post-apocalyptic bedtime story between a child and mother, a passed down memory of a beautiful world. And on this song, you are exploring how loosely we use the word love and how by love, sometimes we mean control. So, okay, I don't know if you've ever read the book Station 11. There's a TV show on HBO based off of the book right now that I actually like can't follow, but the book was like fabulous. It was about like a very like COVID-19 type of like flu pandemic, but it like wiped out like 70% of the world's population. So I'm listening to this song, and because the TV show just came out, I'm like thinking that this is the scene. But can you actually set the scene for like what this post-apocalyptic world looks like and why this song needs to take place in that particular setting?
Oh, wow. I'll try. I don't quite know like too many of the details of what it looks like, but I think that some of it like could even be now or could be soon, or I think it's just like this weird, dark, thick, oppressive feeling of how we're so separate from nature and like how like we already are, and we're, you know, like I throw something in the trash and it's like that has to go somewhere. Like it's not like it can just, it's not gone just because I don't see it anymore. I mean, I work at Starbucks. Like we throw out an incredible amount of milk jugs, like that are supposed to be recycled, and we actually separate them into recycling and trash, and then they go out to the dumpster. But because the landlord of the shopping center doesn't want to pay for the recycling dumpster or something, they actually just all go in the trash. Like it doesn't matter that they're ever separated because they ultimately all go in the trash. And it's like, it's weird. It's like, we're like, it's such a weird last step of like, okay, this goes in this, and this goes in this bin, and this goes in this bin. But even though we know that like in like 100 yards that way, they're going to go in the same bin. You know, like there's something
it's like a facade, like this show that we put on.
Yeah. So I guess, and I'm sure that happens in like many places and many, many homes. I mean, I do that at home, and it's like, we all do it. It's like, there's this point where, I don't know, that's not really answering what it looks like, except that I think in a way that does, I don't know. It does feel like that. Like when you see an overflowing dumpster or something, it's just like, oh my gosh. Like also like I'm, you know, thinking about touring and the like super, super hard impact of getting on a plane to go do like one festival that's like 4,000 miles away or something. I think that that gets haunting after many years of doing that. It's just different, like because it feels like it feels so fragile. Like it feels, I don't know. I haven't, you know, I don't have like a painting in my mind or a video in my mind or something for that song. It's just, it's just this feeling of like, what are we doing? Like, when are we gonna like actually address and face some of the decisions that we're making, mm-hmm. and like stop with the facade?
This observation that I got from Flowers, it might be a reach, but I wanted to like throw it out there and see what you thought. Listening to the chorus and reading the lyrics, the chorus goes, "This world was never mine, this world was never yours, this world has never seen a place treated so unkind and called it love before." To me, that chorus, and this is like the part where I could be like completely reaching, it has a very like "this land is your land" vibe to it, which is like a complicated song that Native Americans and a lot of other people see as like a colonist message and excludes First Nations people. Molly Obomsawin wrote a really great essay on it for Smithsonian Folkways. There's a really great article on NPR about it. So about Flowers, you wrote, "I'm exploring the sense of ownership and domination we feel over fragile ecosystems of which we are only a part of." So I'm wondering, like, thinking about what Molly and other First Nations people are saying about "this land is your land" and what you're saying about these ecosystems which are only a part of, do you see how like I'm making that connection? And I'm like wondering where that observation lands for you.
Yeah, I think that's a good connection. I think that probably the pacing of that, like, yeah, like "this world" versus like "this land," like that feels like it probably was like bubbling up somewhere from subconsciousness or something, from, you know, knowing that song, swirling around in my mind. And yeah, it is kind of a counter to that, I guess, like that this land isn't our land and it never was. And we sure aren't treating it as if, even if it's not ours, we sure aren't treating it as if we love it.
Tell me again.
Next song is "Real Time, Real Tears."
For a little while longer now, it just might need to be like this. We're going anywhere, feels like walking high on a wire in the wind. It's hard to leave any story when it's over without dying to hear.
This is the first song on the album that made me cry a little bit, especially in like reading about it and then having your siblings involved in the song. So you wrote this song in the green room at Club Hasim, where you were sharing a bill with Anna Tivel, and you learned that a favorite uncle had died. It sounds like a great family member. So can you tell me about your uncle and how you figured, like, you wrote the song that night and then you performed it on stage at Club Hasim. So how did you figure to write a song like this in that moment, and how it feels to express grief through song?
For me, the first thing I wanted to do, this is my Uncle Ali who had passed away really suddenly, and, you know, I'd had a couple hours to be thinking about this and calling and texting with my family, because I had just, you know, I got the news, we were on the turnpike, like headed across Massachusetts. And my Uncle Ali was just so incredibly creative. And when I think about like creative people and the people in my life who I see as the most creative, they're never necessarily the people who have primarily made a living out of being a musician or being an artist or being a playwright or, you know, anything like that. It's like their way of being with the world. And my Uncle Ali was like, just so, I mean, so creative in every aspect of his life. And he was a really gifted writer, really gifted illustrator. And he collaborated with his, one of his daughters a lot on writing screenplays. And she's a director. Yeah, like when I heard about that, it just
it just made me want to create something. A lot of times there's this long journey of writing something and then kind of having, there's like this protective time and this kind of guarded time where the song is like only belongs to you, and it's only, you know, it's just you have it in your head or on your guitar or something. And then there's, you know, maybe a year later a recording comes out, or 5 years later a recording comes out. But I just wanted to be raw and creative, and just so I finished this song and then I just wanted to play it like right away and like in that moment, because that was how I could feel. I think like my reaction to like loss and grief is often a reminder that I'm alive or something, or like a reminder that I'm like, okay, wow, I still get to be here. So I'll just pick up that energy that he can't give anymore, and I'll make something. Another one of my dad's comes from a really big family, and another one of his brothers just passed away. Another very beloved uncle just passed away a couple weeks ago. After a really, really like brief battle with a very late stage of cancer. That particular uncle was also like incredibly creative and influential in my life, because I remember going over to my Uncle Bob and Aunt Julie's house, and Uncle Bob had a music room. So he had this one room in his house that was entirely dedicated to, you know, he had like guitars and his keyboards, and, you know, he would play in the church band, and he would like show me these songs on the guitar. And just, I have so many relatives who, you know, I don't come from a place where people like decided to try to make a living playing music full time or something. Just was surrounded by so many creative people who like decided that they were going to have a space to do this thing. I have like super deep respect for anybody, probably because it's like what I come from, but I have a lot of deep respect for people who just make music a part of their lives and make creativity a part of their lives in any way, and not necessarily trying to connect it to commerce or, you know, making a living.
Give it an hour, give it a day, give it a song. There's just something about living without. There's just no way around real time and real tears. I never dreamed I'd ask what I need now, that he could bear to watch if I fall down and I don't come back out of the ocean laughing.
The next song is the banger. It's called How Bad I Want to Live, and it's a song about appreciating your physical body while on a very dangerous trail in a pretty bad storm. So this happened to you in real life, and you came to realize how much you want to live and had to like trust your body to cooperate. This is not the first time that you've appreciated your body in song before, which is like, it's a pretty cool theme throughout your solo work. But I'm wondering like how in general you appreciated your body before this happened, and how did this experience change that relationship?
Yeah, I have written about it quite a bit. It feels like a world apart. You know, that song Better and Better that I wrote on How to Break a Fall, that is such a literal song for me. Like I was in such a negative, such a bad self-destructive place at a time in my life that I thought this was, you know, back when I was touring full time with the Stray Birds, and I thought, how could I not go on this next tour? I don't know if I can go on this tour. And I was like, well, if I broke my arm, maybe I wouldn't have to tour. And like, because my head was so messed up in like what my options were, that, like, it was like I was so disconnected from my body. It's still very hard for me to, like, even I was, like, writing about it and at the time and recording and singing about it. And now when I look back, because I'm in a healthier place now, I look back and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, what was I, like, who was I? And like, how bad I want to live is like, it's like I had arrived at this other, I think it was so powerful of a feeling of how bad I want to live on that trail, and like trusting, like, these arms that I had at one point been like, maybe if I just figure out how to break my arm, I won't have to go on tour. Like, that, and I'm on this trail, and like, my arms are the only reason that I'm like here, because I was holding these hiking poles, and this trail was like, so it was like slick mud, like vertical slick mud, just like down to the ocean. And so we would dig, you had to like dig the poles, like the spikes of the poles, into the mud, and then just sort of like launch yourself and then like dig them again. But because they have these points on the bottom of the poles, and like, you could make it across. Yeah, I mean, like, all of the weight of my body and like my life, like, was trusting my arms, like trusting these arms that I at one point was just like, okay, well, those are disposable. Let's just like break those and I won't have to show up in my life for a while. And I think it just like hit me after that experience, like, of just how close we can come to not getting to be here anymore. And and like, whether, and I mean, I definitely, you know, I came pretty close to not wanting to play music anymore at points in my life. And so I feel really grateful to be like alive and living and creating in that way. But I've, you know, that in that moment, it was just like, okay, I could literally just slip off a cliff right now. And I think just realizing that, like, I have to trust my body and trust that it can support me and hold me. And then I have to take care of my body too. I can't ever, like, I have to take care of my mind so that I don't think that I can just like hurt myself in order to, you know, because I'm afraid to make certain decisions that I need to make.
Whew. This feels like a huge realization. It's really exciting. And what a great song, How Bad I Want to Live.
Another really cool like thing about that song and just the process of recording that with Shelby and Joel is that Shelby Means and Joel Timmons, who are singing harmonies on that. And Joel is quite an adventurous friend. And he actually had recommended that Ethan and I go and hike the Kalalau Trail. And so it was just so full circle that we went and hiked this trail and had this experience. And Joel had been there, like, you know, I don't know, 8 or 10 years before. And then Joel got to come over to the basement and sing on this song. It was really special.
His plan all along.
Yeah, his plan all along was that we'd have a really freaky time and that he'd get to sing some harmonies.
Track is Dogs Run On, and you say this song is for all the best dogs running through our hearts forever. And I will tell you, I've cried many times, like, listening to this song, watching the video, thinking about this song. I was looking up, so you wrote this song about a couple of your family dogs growing up. Sylvie being one of them, who's the one that's passed away most recently. And then what was the first pup's name?
Georgia.
Georgia, okay. Yeah, so I got to meet Sylvie, and she was awesome. I think I told you that I was going to steal her because I loved her so much. But I was like looking at pictures of her last night, just being like, oh man, what a great dog.
Yeah.
When I get home, I'll go to the lake, watch the show on the water the sunset makes. It'll be a little too cold to swim, but we can sit and think about summer coming. I'll throw skippers and you'll sniff logs. One of those parks where they don't allow dogs. Like old times, we won't read that sign. If no one sees us, there's no fine.
I don't know if I really was thinking about dog songs in particular, or animal songs in writing Dogs Run On, but I think that I would say that a writer like John Prine really liberated me to think about not holding back from using any word that like occurred to my imagination while I was writing. Like, you know, he can write about like ice cubes and bathtubs and make it feel like it belongs. And so I guess I just figured I could write about sniffing logs and try to make it feel like it belonged. And so I don't know if it's I don't know. I wasn't really like thinking as much through a catalog of or memory of dog songs as I was just the kind of chances that a songwriter like John Prine takes when I was writing this song, and kind of getting some inspiration from that. Those like leaps of faith of different words and senses, like why can't this word feel poetic, or why can't this activity find a place in a song, you know. I think just finding a place for it. So yeah, talking about throwing skippers and sniffing logs was I kind of felt that was my connection, I guess, just in this way. So less of a dog song and more of a, or less of the catalog of dog songs and more just going out on a limb with experiences in the world and experiences of your senses, or enjoyable experiences that might feel like they would never belong in like an academic poem, but they sure belong in a song.
It's not a trick of the eye. She said goodnight. There was no reason for goodbye. No reason for goodbye. It's not a trick of the eye.
The next song is Not a Trick of the Eye, and it addresses violence and ultraviolet light. For those who don't know, I didn't know, but this is something that you're really obsessed with. Creatures like butterflies and bees can see ultraviolet light and rely on it, but humans cannot sense it. It's beyond our ability, and gives power to a person who is witnessing brutality to name the violence that they see. And you said that the song's not about any one particular incident, but there like may have been videos circulating showing people being killed, namely like Black people, by police officers and others. And then having it kind of like explained away, like we're not seeing what we're actually seeing, like, you know what I mean? Like you'll, without even trying, you know, we've probably seen like half a dozen videos like this in the last 10 years, and people just like getting exonerated or not even going to trial just because it's like, oh, even though there's a video, it's not actually what we're seeing. But just wondering, like, how does that resonate in this song?
Yeah, I think it's, I'm trying to like cut past that part of disbelief. And like, I think in the same way, like with flowers, where it's just like, no, like this is what we're seeing. And kind of like to cut away all the, what were they doing? It's like the question of like, oh, like, well, what was she wearing when this happened? Or what time of day was it? You know, what were they selling? You know, all of these questions that are like, that doesn't seem like a relevant question. Someone was just shot. Someone was hurt. Like, someone just lost their life. And in this song, I'm trying to make this story where the person, the character in the story is like, you know, they're saying goodbye to someone. They're saying good night. They're saying good night at the beginning of the song and the end of the song, but like, there's no reason for goodbye. Like they just thought they were saying good night. They were maybe going out to like run to the gas station or something, or pick up some beer, you know, go for groceries or whatever. And just like, why, like, well, why do all of these other questions even get to be a part of this? Like, somebody was killed. Like, if we're asking all these other questions, like, there must be some other thing. There must be some other, like, wall that we're seeing this through, or some other, like, veil or some color to this whole scenario that we're seeing. And it's like, oh, well, maybe I wonder if we're seeing everything through institutionalized racism, or, you know, like, it's just like, what, there's like all these, I feel like all these questions that, or this, all of this disbelief that we have sometimes, it's just like, I'm just trying to like ask myself and interrogate myself like harder. And I want all of us to do it as best we can to like eradicate, like face the systems that we've invented and dismantle them. Because innocent people shouldn't die and then have really irrelevant questions asked about the scenario.
We are no butterflies. We do not have the eyes for violet light. But I sure did see an innocent man shine.
Song I Don't Ask Trees definitely stuck out for me listening to it, namely the lines, I don't ask trees why they need so much time to grow, I don't ask hearts why they need so much time to know.
When I see you fly so free and far, for me, he said, it's just too hard. How I cried that night when I clipped my so he could be there when I sing.
It's a song about continually looking for self-compassion for yourself through the lens of like a past abusive relationship. And this song ties into the theme of visibility and what we choose to see and name, and that healing is not linear. What's been your experience with acknowledging and naming that the healing process is complicated and not a straight line?
I guess my experience has just been to keep going. Like, to, there's no completion, I guess, to certain parts of myself or certain parts of my life that I've longed for some kind of like very neat, closed, completed, tie the ribbon around it kind of thing. I think I just get a lot of inspiration from nature and just seeing the cycles of death and fungus, like eating the, you know, like the stuff that's being nourished because it has died. Like, you know, what are the places in me that like the things that I've had to let go and let die, and then like what has that made fertile ground for, like for something else to come and be, you know, blooming? Or, and then if something's not ready to be like growing and blooming yet, like maybe it's just a seed. It's not that season yet.
I don't ask trees why they need so much time to grow. I don't ask hearts why they need so
The next song, Margaret, you were listening to a podcast with Margaret Atwood. Can you talk about like what was that podcast and more about like the energy and feeling you had after you heard it?
Yeah, I have to look up what it was. I can't remember what the podcast was called. But she was talking, it was like super early pandemic, like this must have been March or April or May or something, I don't know, 2020. And she was talking about her, like her daily life and what was going on and the friends she was trying to keep in touch with and the squirrels in her ceiling. And like, yeah, and I don't know, like for some, I guess because I just like, I'm like, wow, like, she must be like in some tower somewhere, like just totally like in her own world of, you know, making up some amazing fiction. And she's just like, you know, in her kitchen looking at squirrels like the rest of us. And, and I don't know. It was so like, she was so like human and so funny. I was talking to somebody recently and like came up with a term of like a timestamp. Like I feel like using her name on that song was a timestamp for me because it helps me remember that moment and like that place in the pandemic. And she's certainly in the song and that for some reason that interview with her like was a catalyst for me to finish the song. But the song is very much about my grandmother also. And I think my grandma knew that right away when she heard the song. But but I kind of like that there's distance for my grandma too, and that like there's another name on the song. That is like, that's a pure like early pandemic song of just sitting on my steps out in the sun, writing a waltz for my grandma, listening to podcasts.
It's like Margaret to me has like a lot of Bruce Springsteen, Patty Griffin vibes. It's like the second time bringing up Patty Griffin, but
cool.
What's the like the Lorraine, except that's a very sad song, or Making Pies or something, like very tragic figure. But this lady in this song is very sweet. There's like one part where it sounds like she's like giving you life advice, where she says, what can I say, just be good to your sweethearts and gardens. Be good to your dogs, of course, and your faraway friends. I want to know if that's like actual advice that your grandmother or maybe Margaret Atwood gave you.
I would say not exactly in those words, but especially thinking about faraway friends, like my grandma has maintained very, very incredible friendships. She's in her early 90s and she's maintained these incredible friendships with people in many different places around the world, people who she knows very well that she will never see again in person. And just because she's not going to travel to them and they're not going to travel to her. And she just continues to show up. It's like, I think so many times, like I can get kind of hung up on this detail of like, yeah, but when am I going to see them again, like in person and hang out the way we always did, you know? And
yeah,
I think just realizing that there was some such value to my grandma in like maintaining friendships with full knowledge that you're not going to see them again. Like you're not going to hang out like you did when you were in your 60s and you happened to be in Scotland at the same time or something. And it's, but now you're just letting each other know how you're doing and like maintaining a friendship because of that present moment and not because of like this imagined future. So that is definitely a part of, and the bits about like change and just like we have to, like my grandma is a very, very, very present person and she has lived through very, very sudden, tremendous loss in her life. And she is so resilient and seeing how she's navigated change and navigated like the entire ground, like shifting beneath her like many times over. And I just feel so like, I don't know, like in her presence, she like her resilience is this like towering resilience to me. Like when I'm in her presence, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, like I just feel like such a little kid, like, you sure. know, yeah. That like, wow, like I have so much, like, I hope I get to live decades and decades and decades to just like learn some of these things, and then knowing that with living many decades comes so much loss, and, you know, knowing how many friends she's already lost and family members, and it's just, yeah, and just seeing that that's like a part of life, but it's still like very important to get up in the morning and like get dressed and have your cup of coffee, and then, oh, she opens a bottle of wine at 5 p.m. and pours herself a glass of wine, because,
hell yeah,
like you gotta love your life and yeah. and just do your best, and she's just so grateful.
Does she want to hang out with me?
Probably.
Yeah. All right. That sounds great. I'll be right there.
She doesn't like to travel too much anymore, but I'm sure you could come over to the patio.
All right. I mean, I just gassed up my car, so it's yeah. a good time for me. What can I say? Just be good to your sweethearts and gardens. Be good to your dogs and your faraway friends. When you find bits of light, never on the map. Obviously, this is my favorite opening line of all time. In the hidden hills of Pittsburgh, way up above the street. And I'm trying to imagine where that is, and I wonder if it's in the South Side Slopes or Mount Washington or Millvale. Do you remember? This is just like for my own edification. Do you remember what part of town you're in?
It might be in South Side. There's like, so this was actually, it was like a squat, like a train hopper squat, and it was called Landslide. So if you can ask around and find out,
okay,
where Landslide is,
like 2008,
exactly.
Okay, I was trying to do the math because you're 18 in the song.
Mm-hmm.
I was also like thinking about like the technology that you had at 18 years old to travel around the country, and like I cannot imagine. Can you imagine like doing that now, like? I mean, never mind like the dangers or anything that's happening, like traveling around with like a Garmin GPS or like printed out MapQuest directions, and it just sounds crazy to me.
Yeah, we had so my friend Corey had a cell phone, like a flip phone, and we had an atlas, and that's about it.
God.
Yeah, it was so great.
You said about this song that it's about like traveling, busking all over the country, like just playing at farmers markets, anywhere you could set up and put your guitar case. You said that time and those people are really important to who I am as a musician today. Can you expand on how those times shaped your musicality?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's this idea that we have to just show up and open ourselves to people being open to music, like that we to not put any, I don't know, like not climb inside of any genre boxes and try to stay there too tightly, and to, I mean, we were playing like Johnny Cash songs and like old time fiddle tunes and just anything we could think of, and people will be like, wow, I've never heard this kind of music before, or like, oh my gosh, I love this song, like, could you do Ring of Fire? Or I guess like the presentness and enthusiasm for music that just exists, and how wonderful like music out in the open can be with no artifice and no stage, no separation, no tickets. Like people are just walking by, and they can stay longer if they want, they can throw some money in the case if they want. In a way, it kind of feels like what the music industry is now. It's like the music's out there and we're all just like walking by all the millions of songs that are out there, and if we want to like throw money in the case, we can. So in a way, it kind of maybe prepared me for that. And then at the end, it just comes down to like relationship. And I mean, there are so many people that in the time, the months of my life that I've been busking and traveling like that, there were so many people who like we met them on the street and ended up like staying at their house, you know, or and just becoming friends with them, like meeting their people. And I mean, I remember this is on a separate busking trip, but you know, like just camping on these cliffs like for 2 days, and then like making friends with a bunch of architecture students who then took us to their hometown. And like, I don't know, just the networks and how like chance based like everything is, like of it's just like who walks by. One time I was busking in Dublin and like I met Hillary Clinton because like she was like she was just like there. She was like, I guess it, I don't know, she was like the Secretary of State at the time. And she was just, yeah, like on Grafton Street in Dublin. And so I just like some Irish person like ran by and they were like, I think you want to go around the corner, like somebody big is over there. And we're like, who is it? We're thinking it's like some kind of like musician or something that we would really want
Bono.
To
Bono.
And it's and then like Hillary Clinton walks out of this pub and we're just standing there. We're like, hi. And we're like, we're Americans. And she was like, oh, I can tell by your accents. And then she like shook our hands and that was it. But it was just like, you know, you just never know like what is gonna, I don't know, who's gonna walk by and what like funny thing. I mean, my friend Jacob, and like we laugh about that to this day. We're like, and then Hillary Clinton walks out of this pub. So it's, you know, it's just taught me to, I guess, just like show up and not, I take songwriting very seriously and like the craft that I do, and I love it so much, but I guess just to balance that light and darkness kind of thing and balance the craft of it with the kind of happenstance, chance, like kind of whatever. We're just all walking down the street of life and maybe somebody's playing music at the end. I don't know.
If walls could talk, well, I'd be asking anybody up top with any better ideas about where to go from here.
Washes Out of Diamonds. This is a song about wealth inequality and rising seas that you referred to a little bit earlier. So when you started writing it, it was taking you to a really dark place. So you changed your approach and then made something lighthearted. And there's something to me that sounds like very like old-timey, like from the Great Depression, where there's often like difficult messages delivered and kind of like can't be cheerful ways, you know, like you know, the Pete Bernhard's band Devil Makes Three, that like they make that kind of music that's like, it reminds me of like animated Disney skeletons from like the 40s or something. That's kind of the vibe I get from Watches Out of Diamonds. And we did talk about a little bit about like how it like helps to deliver that kind of hard message in a like a way that's musically kind of the opposite of like what the message is. So what about like this particular approach in Watches Out of Diamonds did you find like relatable in writing this song?
So when I wrote this song, I kind of made like a demo of myself just, you know, upstairs in the house before we moved downstairs to the basement to actually record it. But when I was upstairs making a demo, I was like just stomping on the floor like as I was playing it, just like keeping this like as if it was a kick drum or, you know, a bass drum, just stomping and having that steady beat and kind of playing a sort of jangly sounding guitar and actually feeling kind of like I was a street busker or something.
Or maybe like an animated skeleton.
An animated skeleton, yeah. And then, you know, then I got to play a kazoo solo on here. So
yes.
It's just kind of like, yeah, like, all right, like global warming, let's play kazoo about it. I want it to be catchy because I want people to listen, and then I want people to hear the music first, and then I guess just like let the words sink in and be able to like continue with their day and not have like paralyzing existential dread. And then that's also what I wanted for myself. I didn't want paralyzing existential dread. Right. So I was like, okay, I need to like wrap this song up and go make dinner. So I'm going to do
and
it
not,
this way.
Like, lay face down on the floor for the rest of the night.
Yeah. 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 I mean, there's so much like, maybe I'm just like a super sensitive person, but like, there's just so much like insane stuff swirling around and like that we're just faced with. And I think I'm just trying to find some balance for like, what can my like one human heart hold? What can my human body hold? What can I hold in my life? How much of this can I personally like carry with me every minute of the day? And how much can I kind of ask my community to hold with me? Or how much can I ask society to hold with me? And like, what's the difference between all of that? And I think that's part of like trying to figure out ways to say what I want to say, but not be completely so wrecked that I don't want to sing it anymore or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I gotta hand it to him. It's a good machine. Who cares if it's running dirty or clean? As long as it's making parking spots and watches out of diamonds. As long as it's making parking spots and watches out of diamonds.
This next song is You Don't Need Me, and I listened to it and then read your commentary, and then I was like, I need to send this to Lizzie Noh, who is another host here on Basic Folk and also a touring musician. I just like needed to talk to her about it.
You need someone who's still afraid to send the letter that she wrote. Someone afraid of the water, afraid of the boat. You need someone who believes you when you tell her that she needs you. Tell her you're the only way. Tell her it's crazy, but it's true. But you don't need me.
So this song is about artists navigating relationships within the music industry. And in your commentary, you say like, it also seems like it's about like a romantic relationship. And the narrator is describing themselves in the past, the things they believed, the things they agreed to, the treatment they tolerated, the boundaries they put aside, rather than like talking about how the industry is like abusive and manipulative. Can you talk about like what it's like to be standing where you are looking back and being done with that part of your career?
Yeah, I mean, the things that have shifted for me are, I guess, like believing that certain gatekeepers and doorways were like the only way to do it, I guess, like that, you know, I decided that I wanted to make my own label. And I did that. And this is the third album now that I'm putting out myself. And I want to do that because I want to treat everybody in my circle, all the musicians that I hire to play on my records. I want to know that as the tide would ever rise for me as an artist, I want it to rise for everybody who helps me to make my music. There's like no money left for artists. In many of the older models of the music industry, there were a lot of people who were able to make a living, and those people were not necessarily like the musicians themselves. Or yeah, I guess it's just kind of questioning like the like clamoring over each other for trying to get notoriety and certain, I don't know, like PR campaigns, and you know, who gets to be on Basic Folk and talk to Cindy Howes? And but like, I don't know, I was just talking to another friend about this that who she was just like really, really disappointed with a couple situations that she's facing right now in the music industry with some people she's working with, and just reflecting on like how much she loves the people but how much she doesn't love the company that they work for or what they just think they have to do because that's how it's always been. And like, we're all doing this in some way because we love music, not because we want to like hurt people. And there's other layers of it too, but I guess from this place, it's like, I'm more sure than ever that I want to make music for the rest of my life in some way. But I guess I'm just like looking for less permission, you know, and I'm not looking for somebody to tell me that like it's that I have to tour a certain number of days and hit the major markets a certain number of times or fly across the country to do a certain, you know, thing, just, or that like it's all gonna vanish. Like, it's just like a scarcity mindset and like a fear-based mindset a lot, and I think it's like super toxic, and it's like counter to, I guess, like why we all, maybe not all of us, but like many of us come to music because it's like it heals us in a way. And then to be in a place where like the thing that at one time like healed you and was healing to you and was a healing practice is suddenly like destroying you is like really, really heavy. And like of all the really, truly heavy shit in the world, like are we gonna like let that be the only option? Like that's like we have to sacrifice like that this was a healing part of our lives. So I'm like looking for a more interdependent, like I'm not trying to be like just me, nobody, I don't need anybody kind of thing. Like it's not like I don't need anybody. It's just like you don't need me. Like whatever that model is, it's fine. Like they're gonna be fine. Like they just don't need me. Like I'm not gonna be a part of it. Like I don't want to hate music. I want to love music. And I want music to like, to, yeah, I want to be there for the songs when they want to be written. I don't want to be like, no, sorry. Like I'm in too much pain from a thing that I thought was nice.
Yeah. Well, it's something that Lizzie was pointing out to me is that you don't need me works both ways. Like it works for the artist versus the industry, but it also works for the industry versus the artist, you know? It's very like
totally
powerful metaphor.
Yeah, I can see that could work both ways.
Yeah. One more song. This song is called Leftover Tears, and it has Kaya Cater singing on this track, and your voices together are like the best blend I've heard in a really long time. It's just like
if it's what you need, any road can be walked alone. I just thought this might be a place to walk each other home. I just thought this might be the world where tenderness grows in the rain. I just thought this might be the time to ease each other's pain.
I don't know if I've heard the two of you sing together or not, but whoever's idea was brilliant. So good. About this song, Leftover Tears, is this song optimistic or pessimistic? And why did you choose to close the album with this?
I think it's optimistic. Like the leftover tears from the day I was born is to me is like kind of imagining in a very like, I don't know, like sci-fi, not real way. Like, as you know, that moment, like if all of us could be together as just like crying, screaming babies, like just new to the world. And then we're like, now here we are with this world that we've constructed and all of these, again, with, you know, just the ideas and concepts that humans have invented and this is where we are. But like it's like, wait, but just for a second, like what about like those tears and like the way that like when you're born into this world, like the tears are like in a way like we inherit this world that like we didn't set up this way or something. Like we're born and we don't get to, like we didn't like design the world before we got here. We like show up and then we're kind of left to like either uphold the world the way it is or like change parts of it. But I guess just like realizing that that's kind of like a responsibility or something, or an opportunity to.
Yeah, there's the optimistic or the pessimistic. Is it a responsibility right. or an opportunity? I guess it just depends on your perspective.
Yeah, or maybe just even the like noticing that changes that have happened are because somebody pays attention and to it and notices and cares and invests time and energy to organize around making a change. And if changes don't happen, then stuff stays the way it is. Hmm. And not that that's like the way it's supposed to be. That's just the way it is. I guess it's just like, it's hope that we can be more human together.
And scene. Are you ready to do the lightning round again?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Maya DeVitri, what is the song that makes you cry every time?
Oh. The one that comes to my mind right now is The House Where Nobody Lives or The House Where Nobody Lived, Tom Waits.
Mm, good one. Who is your guitar hero?
Guitar hero. Currently, my guitar hero is Chris Eldridge, who I got to... Yeah, he plays on Dogs Run On, but also I was doing like an online guitar class for a couple weeks over the winter, and he was like a guest teacher one of the sessions, and just his approach to music in general and to guitar is really wonderful.
What is your favorite scented candle?
I love the Happy Dragon candle.
Go on.
It's called Happy Dragon. I don't even know what scent it is.
Is that that's the name of the scent?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can find out.
Okay, wonderful. Yes, our listeners are dying to know. What is one product that you cannot live without?
A product? The first thing I think of is like olive oil.
What is your favorite musical?
I love the music. I love the music from like Les Mis.
Depressing.
I know.
On brand. When's the last time you cried when you were watching a movie or a TV show?
Oh man, I just watched all of Star Wars and cried multiple times.
Great.
Like I had never watched any Star Wars before, and just watched all of them.
What is your favorite brand of sweatpants?
Brand? I don't know.
That's very on brand.
Anything from Goodwill.
Okay, here is the last question. Where do you want to go once travel restrictions worldwide are lifted?
I want to go to Iceland.
Have you been?
No, but I just want to sit in like some hot springs and chill.
I want that for you.
Thank you.
That sounds really good.
And visit Thor, who played harmonica on the record.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Maya DeVitri, congratulations on the new album, Violet Light. It's really great. Great album. And thanks for coming on Basic Folk. You're the best. Literal best.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me, Cindy. It's nice to talk to you.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by me, and I did a great job. Our music is composed by Alex Stanton. You can find all of the episodes of Basic Folk wherever you find podcasts or basicfolk.com. Thanks a lot for listening all the way to the end. You're great, and we like you so much. Talk to you next time. Okay, bye.